Right, Beth, plans. Here you go.
What's this?
A kazoo for the fanfare.
Fanfare.
And I'll just take that and put it in here.
That's my script.
Yes, wait.
My only script.
Okay.
And you just put it in a cannon.
Yeah. Just hold this and put it there.
Here?
Yeah. You're going to love this. Now, run away!
What?
Fire in the hold!
What? Ah!
Amazing! Right, kazoo!
What?
I'll do it then. Hooray!
Ow!
Sorry.
Oh, you're still a bit on fire there, Beth. Hang on.
Please get off.
Ah, that's the new script of yours. Reload.
Sir, you're so literal.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Beth Eyre.
And I'm Sarah. And today we're delighted to be chatting to two goddesses of audio drama about relaunching podcast production houses. The inspiring Julie Hoverson of 19 Nocturne Boulevard and the amazing Beth Eyre of Wooden Overcoats in Greater Boston, Wolf 359, Snatchback and more, which you'll hear all about after Audioblocks get thanks for sponsoring this show. I thank you all. And I know you want to ask me, don't you, what is Audioblocks? What do they do? Well, they are a purveyor of a plethora of sound effects, music loops, and, well, if your interest is piqued enough, there's a 7-day free trial. Get on this, folks. Get out to download them from Audioblocks at audioblocks.com/ADPP. Marvellous. So, Beth. Snatchback. It's a company you've recently relaunched with Drayton Trench being performed with Wireless. So it's a great cast performing to live audiences, and I did get to see some of this, and it is hilarious. So if you haven't listened, do. So alongside Drayton Trench, there are various theatrical performances, and we've got, of course, season 3 of Wooden Overcoats to look forward to. So you're a very busy lady. So Beth, do tell us, how did Snatchback come to be, and why have you decided to relaunch?
That is a good question. So I always loved radio, as we know. I, a few years ago, started a company with a few friends called Invisible Theatre, which was an online company producing audio. The idea was that we would put pieces out, some of which were more like audiobooks and some of which were more like plays, and we had bits of new writing, and we were sort of all doing the producing, the acting, the directing, and promoting new writing as well. We did some Edgar Allan Poe, we did some Dickens, we did some full-length new dramas, and we did a series of 5-minute pieces. And I really loved doing it. I loved having the freedom to produce stuff quite quickly and get it from an idea to being out there, as it was at the time, on SoundCloud. So it was sort of before I'd really got the hang of the podcasting world.
Yeah.
So it never went out as a podcast. And I was also at that time, I was acting and directing, and I was even doing the sound editing.
amazing.
I think it's a really good thing to know a little bit about if you're in this world, really useful. But also, having worked with John and Andy on Wooden Overcoats and sort of an array of very talented sound designers, and Chris Jarvis, who we worked with the other day on Ivory Towers, so lovely and so very talented, I sort of realised that there is a huge gap in the sort of skills that I have and the skills that people who really do this have. And so partly this relaunch is sort of about embracing other people's talents and being more collaborative, partly because I discover this huge and wonderful world of podcasting, and I'm now a devotee. I really like things going out as a podcast, which is something Invisible Theatre never did.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose chiefly where I'm at now, it was very important to me that this was something that prioritised promoting parts for women, promoting representation for women.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wouldn't be so excited about doing it if that wasn't very much part of the fabric of it.
Fantastic,
and I'm very open to that being all female-led, 50-50 all the ways under the sun, but it's kind of at the very core of it. So yeah, that's the main reason why we relaunched as Snatchback, a new company.
Yes, what a fabulous name.
Yeah, I like it.
Where did that come from? Who threw that up in the air?
Well, I did. I wanted something that sort of, I want it to be a very inclusive, happy experience for everybody. Mm. But I think there is a sort of strong feeling behind it. And I sort of initially cycled through some perhaps overly angry sounding names like Fury, as in the Furies, which I sort of thought might be a little bit off-putting. And then I was a little bit concerned about this name. My mother at first was like, darling, you can't call it that. Do you know what a snatch is? And I'm like, yep, I do. But I asked people and they seemed to like it and remember it, which was more of the point. And I don't know, I like the idea of it. It seemed about right.
Yeah, no, it's definitely memorable. And I think it's great fun. And well, for sure, I mean, you see it and it does provoke that definite reaction. So, yeah, good choice, I do find. And your inaugural launch back into the world of podcasting came with Drayton Trench. Is that right? Is that your first project?
Yeah, Drayton Trench is Snatchback's first project, which we did in collaboration with the Wireless Theatre Company, with Marielle, who's brought her years of experience, which has really been invaluable for us to sort of have her as a collaborator right at the beginning of things for us, because she's been doing this for years and is very, very good at it. So, yeah, Drayton Trench, our first project, comedy. I hope there'll be much more comedy. Thank you for coming to those. They were really good fun to do.
Well, I could not. I mean, I had actually heard, because we did an interview a while ago with you, Fiona and I, and and I very conscientiously was trying to fathom bits and projects and things that you'd done. So I did hear the previous version of Drayton Trench.
Wonderful.
So, yes, to have this now in a slightly different form, because what you did from the original was you changed the main central character to a female character role, is that right? And there are elements that you also changed to make it your new version. So what kind of changes did you make and why did you make those decisions?
So the most important change was changing Drayton, who's been in the past been a man, to a woman. Mm-hmm. She had Alice Osmansky, who's a fantastic actress, really lovely, playing Drayton Trench, the main detective character.
Yes. Yeah,
she's absolutely lovely. We met a few years ago playing Hermia and Helena, in fact.
Oh, wicked, yeah.
She's a really fantastic character actress, but also a very charming lead, as it turns out. Drayton is I think David wanted to write a detective who didn't have sort of a dour, dark past, a sort of non-grumpy, non-stereotypical detective who was sort of up for solving crime and very excited and quite capable in a slightly mad sort of way.
It's a very chirpy way of being, you know, chased
very
and
chirpy.
Shot at and find themselves stuck in washing machines, which I think Alice did beautifully.
Yeah, I think she got a really lovely quality to it, and I just loved seeing a woman at the centre of it.
Yeah.
It changed the dynamic. It was just really fun. It made the female-dominated cast. All the cast were fantastic. Mm-hmm. Men and women were really lucky. It was also lovely to do it live. I'm a massive fan of doing radio comedy live.
Yes. Yeah.
We got to do a lot of the Foley live. Esme Patty Ford, who did a whole array of voices, was also quite quickly do sound effects. And you could see that, which I love. It was lovely having an audience there to actually respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of things that were quite different to the original experience.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, what I'm in the middle of organising for next year for the audio drama production podcast Worldwide Teams, which come as a course of seeing your Drayton Trench live, and which I thought I'd just take elements of that, of what I was seeing, and flip it a bit so we get some audience members doing some live Foley and coming up to do a few lines themselves and things like that, and it's involving your good self and some wonderful voice actors, Kareem Cromfley, Fiona Thrale, Robert Cudmore and someone called Sarah Golding, at least to produce some live performances of original audio drama works. So I'm aiming to achieve that next year.
That's incredibly exciting. Get your scripts in, everybody.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yes, I am very excited about it. So, yes, it's officially launched now. So we've officially launched. It's a script writing competition in which from January the 8th to the 21st, we have an open window, folks, for submissions via the amazing Audio Drama Network site. And we'll post details of where exactly to post on the 8th of January on our Facebook pages. And we're asking for 10, 15 and 30 minute original scripts. And basically a panel of judges will choose some of those to be performed at the Vault Festival on March the 7th in London at the Crescent Theatre from 10 past 6 to 10 past 7-ish. And we'll aim to do some also at the Edinburgh Podcast Festival. Though we're waiting for finalised details of that to be confirmed. And we also have confirmed, yes, we want to join the funds from about 20 or so independent audio drama producers who you'll know if you've listened from the Audio Drama Production Podcast contributors, including folks like, oh my goodness, who have we got? Rick Coast for Audio Oblivious, Oriel Stage Studios, Potpourri Theatre, MJ Corwin, Dean Leonardson, Girl in Space's Sarah Werner, Travis Vingroff, Pacific of Lake Clarity, Boyd Barrett, Alexander Dana, oh my goodness, I could go on. It's just a great list of people involved, and there's so many more folks, and what they'll do is they'll be all excited to read and find your gem of a script and make it into an audio drama with their stamp on it for our summer season. So some great opportunities. Do get writing, folks. And just to say, it is still owned by you, but you, by contributing to the competition, give us permission to perform it live and have it produced by those independent audio dramatists. So exciting. Get writing, folks. So back to Drayton Trench. This was written by the amazing Mr. David Velvet K. Barnes. Will you be collaborating again in the future on some fun things?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. David's a member of the company, and I've done quite a lot of work with David, and he is very interested in writing strong female parts, comedic female parts, which is very important to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested in working with David and an array of new writers and anybody who sort of wants to put women at the centre, regardless of gender. So we have a show coming up this year at Vault, and I'm really excited about planning new audio drama opportunities for 2018. There's just so much I want to do. I can't wait to sort of get started. I just want all the time in the world to make these wonderful things.
Superb. And I do wish someone would invent that time slowing down thing to fit everything in, because there's so much to do, isn't there? So with Snatchback itself, how have you pulled together people to join you? Do you do open casting calls, or is it mainly from people you've worked with?
So far we've sort of had Drayton Trench, so that was very much in collaboration with Wireless, where we sort of had table read auditions where we and Marielle invited actors that they knew or who had written to them, mm-hmm. to sort of read the parts and cast it from that. Mm-hmm. But we're very interested in reaching out to new people in the future and having auditions, and obviously now it's getting so much easier to send auditions online, which is lovely for audio. Yeah. And that's worked for me quite a lot in the past, and I think it's lovely that actors can just send you things and gives you a really good idea of what they might be suitable for.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very up for receiving people's voice tape.
Fantastic. Can they send that to your website address, or where would be the best place for people to throw their reel at you?
If they want to throw their reel at me, we are snatchbackco, so snatchbackco@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. People are very welcome to send me stuff. We'll also be putting up calls on Twitter when we have projects coming up. But in the meantime, if you just want to send things through, that's lovely too.
Exciting.
Very excited to sort of hear from and work with new people at the moment. So yeah, the more the merrier.
Marvellous. And that's not just audio kind of actors. It would be people who've written things as well. Perhaps you're looking for new scripts too?
Absolutely looking for new scripts. We'd love to hear from anybody who wants to be involved. Sound editors, writers, actors, musicians. The sky's the limit, really. Yeah.
Superb. And so future plans for Snatchback. You've got Vault Festival lined up, and you're saying about other projects. Are you able to give us any exclusives?
So I think we're both in a similar situation with Vault, where we've kind of got stuff agreed. But by the time this is out, I think it will all be sort of clear.
I hope so.
I think so too. So Snatchback are going to be doing our first theatre production at Vault Festival, and if this is going out in December, you should be able to find it on the website now, although not when I'm saying this, so we'll see. We're going to be doing a version of Timothy, which is about a woman who invites her two best friends round because she thinks her husband is trying to murder her. Oh. And they try and work out if it is. It's a wonderful character comedy with three women and one man. It's very silly. It's quite dark. It's a lot of fun. And it's fantastic for funny women, which is great. And I'm very excited to be sort of starting our theatrical adventures with that. I can't really say what's going on in terms of audio, but I can't wait until I can. So watch this space because it's really exciting. And 2018 is going to be the start of many things Snatchback, which is great. And I hope it will be involving lots and lots of people.
And just to say, I have banged the drum a little bit about casting and how you can perhaps just think a little bit deeper about your casting decisions, whether or not something is for a male or female character. And I think it's something that a lot of people, if they just looked a little further, could perhaps create a little bit more fun in their casting processes. What do you think? Do you agree?
I completely agree. I think, you know, ideally people just write loads of wonderful parts for women.
Yeah.
But
yes,
I think it's also, you can be conscious about maybe simply switching. It can often make a lot more sense than you might think. Parts that people just assume should be male actually could work just as well female. Obviously, we switched with Drayton Trench. I think it worked really well. So I think there is an imbalance. So I'm interested in people writing more parts for women, people writing exclusively for women, people switching male parts if necessary. I think whatever it takes, because it's quite a big issue. So I think fighting it on all fronts is the way to go in a very jolly and happy and enthusiastic way. But nevertheless, a friend of mine who's a director, her 15-year-old daughter was asked what percentage of the population she thought were female. And she guessed 20% based on what she'd seen on TV.
Didn't.
And I mean, that's an extreme example, obviously, but you just think, what is going on?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it is that blinkered view of things, isn't it, that you get and what you see, what you hear and what you know of your world does affect your understanding of the place. So that's amazing.
It is, and it does, and I think it's a very serious thing that needs to be addressed, but there is hope. I think people are becoming more aware of it. I think people are more open to change, open to different options. The National Theatre's just put a new scheme in place so that by 2021 they're going to have 50-50 casting, which is very exciting. And I feel like it's a good, positive time to be pushing onwards.
And talking of pushing onwards, have you heard of Julie Hovison and her amazing body of work in audio?
Well, I have, thanks to you. And the last 2 weeks when we've been talking about this, I had a look online. And I was just overwhelmed by how prolific she has been. It's really incredible. And it kind of embraces a whole load of different things. So there's something for everyone. An amazing amount of output. So thank you very much for discovering that for me.
Well, that's superb. And I hope other people, if you haven't already, please do jump on the 19 Nocturne Boulevard site. All of these will be on your show notes. So do check those. And it will take you, well, a good year or two at least to get through only a fifth of her work. But do have a good browse. And we talk about this a little bit in the interview, so I'm not going to spoil it, but she is absolutely amazing. She's a producer, a director, an actor, a sound designer. She's just a creative machine. So I'd like you now to just sit back, relax, and listen to Julie and I having a lovely chat about her audio drama relaunch of 19 Nocturne Boulevard, which was producing just under 10 years ago and has been on hiatus until now. Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast to Julie Hovison. Hello, Julie.
Good morning. I mean, good evening, or it's time zones. Time zones are my downfall.
We are talking at a ridiculous time for you in the morning, aren't we? So thank you very much for giving up your time to speak to us. Now, you are definitely one of the most well-respected figures in podcasting that I know. You've got over 600, is it, podcast shows. I know you've got hundreds and hundreds of audiobooks under various names on the audioverse. So can you fill the listeners in a little bit about perhaps just picking some of your personal favourites that you've been involved in?
Well, I mean, for audio productions, of course, mm-hmm. my own.
Yes.
19 Nocturne Boulevard.
Yes.
And Fatal Girl and even Bingo the Birthday Clown.
Yes.
I mean, I have a whole pantheon of bizarre shows that I've created.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Edict Zero, which I can never tout enough.
Yes.
That's Jack Kincaid's show. That he works so hard on it, and it's totally a labor of love for him.
Oh, it's beautiful though, isn't it? It's just a film for the mind. It's amazingly produced. Yes. Yes, I'm lucky enough to be jumping on the Edict Zero train in a few episodes' time. So, hooray. But
exciting, isn't it?
It is. He's just such a great writer, as are you. Now, and your role within these, so you don't just do one thing, you have so many strings to your bow. What are your favourite aspects of podcasting that you do currently?
Always, you're going to be disappointed. It's always in writing and acting. Mm-hmm. I do production by default, not because it's my choice. The place that most, you know, very, very ambitious shows fall apart is in the production, because too many times writers want to write, but then they have to find somebody to produce their show, and the producers are the ones spending 10 times the amount of work and start to get annoyed after a while.
Yeah.
And then suddenly the group falls apart. Mm. That actually happened with one of the first groups that I was in. And I mean, I don't know that that's why it ceased producing, but it's always been my guess because, you know, it is hard.
Yeah.
And I produce very well, but that's because I'm picky.
Well, it's definitely a full sound whenever you're listening to any one of your podcasts. You know, there's not a dull moment to be had. So there's a lot going on. So, yeah, you can definitely tell it's had time spent on it. Yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing is, when I first started producing, I actually wasn't aware of much of what was out here online as far as audio productions go. I was coming from listening to old time radio and then Big Finish and like the BBC stuff. So I had a very high bar that I set myself.
Yes.
And so I'd set this bar, and I had actually created about 6 shows before I even started looking at what was available online. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm already better than everybody.
But that's excellent, though. You know, why not set the bar high? Why not try and emulate things that you've been impressed by? I think that's brilliant, and more people should take that as a, you know, as their main starting point. Because when was it you started to podcast? Because very simply, the reason why we also wanted to talk to you is because you've got a relaunch of Nocturne Boulevard really happening right now. So talk us through what kind of happened and why things had to change.
Well, I mean, the reason I started to begin with was I was working with an old time radio recreation group locally that didn't really do web stuff. They did live performances.
Superb.
But the frustration came because there were very few good roles for females.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that
the truth? Oh, Lord. And like every other drama group, we had like 3 dudes who got all the main roles and then 8 women waiting for something.
Yeah. It's a sad case. Yeah. Across the world, I feel your pain.
Oh, yes. It's the way it always is. Mm. And so, you know, I'd get like all of the character parts and all the unspeakable accents. It was old time radio.
Yeah.
And then nothing else. I mean, there was one... Mm. There was one day we were doing a live show at a school and one of our actors didn't show up, and the director's like, oh gosh, we don't have one of our villain cowboys, one of our outlaws. Could you do it? And I'm like, oh, sure I can, you know. And she's like, gosh.
Brilliant.
And so it's always funny when I get to pull that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But you know, it was always difficult. So I started writing scripts, but of course, you know, the old time radio group only wanted stuff that was in the style of old time radio.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Though they did participate in some of my original recordings.
Uh-huh.
And then a friend of mine, Ray, who's in a lot of my shows, I got him into the old time radio group. Then he, on Craigslist, spotted an ad to be in a podcast show.
Uh-huh.
And he auditioned for it and got in. And they recorded locally. They didn't do satellite recording. They had a location.
Yep.
because they were very picky about sound.
Okay.
And he got me in because they still needed a female lead.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that role, and this was the Unspeakable and Inhuman, which was a sort of a Lovecraftian soap opera comedy.
Wow, sounds amazing.
It was really funny, but mm-hmm. unfortunately it did seem that it was run by committee, or, you know, there were several people involved and...
Too many cooks.
Well, and it became too much work for some of them.
Okay, yeah.
And while we were doing that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got scripts already. I could do my own show. And I actually created the 19 Nocturne opener because I had submitted a script to a contest. And the contest was an old-time radio group thing. Mm. But they said you couldn't use the opener from an existing show. You had to make up one.
Okay.
And I had made it up for that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know.
So the adventure begins. Yes, exciting.
Exactly. And, you know, this was summer. And I'm like, okay, I'll start in October. Because October is the month for, because I'm doing, you know, a lot of spooky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 9 episodes ready to go by October.
Wow.
Because... I went crazy, frankly. And of course, one of the first ones I did was a Lovecraft adaptation because he's so easy. And one that nobody, I think, has ever done before, frankly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which is Within the Walls of Eryx. It's actually a Lovecraft, one of his rewrites for another person.
Okay.
So it's just one of those things that caught my ear. I love adaptation. I studied screenwriting before all this.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow, okay.
I've always been real interested in adaptation because it is very difficult. Mm. It's way more tricky than just translating the words onto the page. It's also in how it's written and how you present it. I mean... For example, I don't know how familiar you are with Lovecraft's work, but I did the Dunwich Horror, which my adaptation is really good, just if I say so myself. But no, it actually, I took great pains on it.
Yeah.
But the story, the original story is kind of impossible because... The main characters, the main protagonists don't appear till 2/3 of the way through the story.
Right.
Because everything prior to that is backstory.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes.
And that makes it a very, it's a beautiful story. There's a lot of good stuff, but it makes it a very difficult story to tell. Because you have to front load with a ton of information, or you have to play through all the backstory, which just kind of ends at one point. And you're like, wait, is that it? So, I mean, that was just one of the main difficulties with doing that story. Another one was that I really, really wanted... See, Lovecraft never really wrote female characters. They were included, and they sometimes had... A line.
Sure.
But in the Dunwich Horror, the mother, Lavinia Whateley, the mother of the monster, effectively, is mentioned a few times and is actually kind of interesting. And all movie adaptations make her crazy. And she's not crazy in the story, and that bothered me. Except for, you know, they do it because people like to play crazy.
I know I do.
And I was like, you know, and I'm always looking at the women. I'm always trying to bring out some more female, you know, aspects to stuff. Because, like I said, I aim for at least an equal script. I mean, I don't force that on if it doesn't make sense, you know, but... like when I adapted The Temple, which takes place on a World War I German U-boat, I didn't put any female characters in it. But I did play one of the officers.
I don't blame you. I think that's wonderful.
But, well, because I couldn't, the reason I wanted to play that character is because I like playing crazy too. But But when adapting the Dunwich Horror, I very carefully didn't make Lavinia crazy. I give a few flashback bits to her and made it very clear that she was not right. I mean, she was probably developmentally disabled in some way. And also, I very carefully made her somebody you could feel sorry for, but not actually like, which is actually really hard. And that was important because it leaves you with a very strange feeling afterwards. I also, when I did Lovecraft's Rats and the Walls, I made the main character female instead of male because the main character in that is an elderly person who, after their son returns in World War I as a maimed invalid, cares for the son until his death, and then moves back over to England to refurbish a house and lives with a ton of cats. I'm sorry, it sounds like a woman to me. But and actually with that one, with gender swapping, it added a dimension to it for me, because part of what is motivating this character that isn't even really addressed in the original story is this overwhelming burden of grief, which men can't show, but women can, at least in the era. And the idea of this closeness is much more realistic between a mother and son than between a father and son. Because in the era, a lot of times fathers were business-oriented and not as present in a child's life. And so I was able to bring out more of that. And so it's just, I like the experiment of it, and that gave me a few other things to play with, too.
Yeah, I've also hopped around looking at the different things you've produced, and I see you produced an anime series as well for audio, which is brilliant series, and I really loved listening to that. So what kind of drew you to that?
Well, of all things, I mean, it's certainly not the only or the first series, but most of the things that would be classed as audio anime previously in the amateur world out here, because I believe there are radio series in Japan that are attached to mangas and anime, but I'm not sure because I haven't really looked into it, not speaking Japanese. But in the amateur world, most of the ones you find are inspired by an actual show, an already existing show. Not all of them. There are a few that are original, and some are actually very good, but mine, I think it came because I had the idea for the character. And then I started with the idea of sort of subverting some of the tropes of anime. I mean, the show's called Fatal Girl, and the basic premise is you've got this girl, Chiyoko, who is, she comes from a long line of monster hunters, and her curse, though, through that, is that she has to kill 100 monsters before she can die, or 101 monsters. But the way she fights them is she actually drops dead and leaves her body and fights on the spirit plane. Naked, of course, but with lots of hair.
Of course, of course.
I was enjoying playing with many of the tropes and some of the, you know, the stereotypes of anime, and actually went looking for things to incorporate to make this more, I mean, not in a joking way. I mean, they're very serious in the show. The show is actually a very serious show, though it has humorous moments. But I mean, the fact that she can only be out of the body for 5 minutes before the body starts to take damage, you know, and so she's got Ken, her stepbrother, running around with a defibrillator and a watch to wake her up. That was 2010-ish, it sounds so long ago. I mean, I started in 2008, 2009, I think, and then produced through about 2013, I think, is when my last show came out. I could look, but not from here. And my website, of course, hasn't been updated since then. I mean, unfortunately, the website program doesn't exist past Vista. So I have to, if I want to, I have to like crank up the Vista machine.
So if anyone can help Julie and come into the 22nd century, then please contact her as soon as possible. But you are responsible for so many amazing shows. I mean, just for example, the Mango show you do, there is nothing like it that I know of on the audio drama circuit at the minute. And there's just so many rich story veins that you've tapped.
But yeah, I had so much fun with Fatal Girl, and I've actually got a second season where I've got most of the voices recorded. I just haven't had the time to do anything. And the reason being that, you know, I used to have a cushy job that paid all my bills, and I was able to, and I had tons of free time, and I made all these shows. And then our department got phased out because we got replaced by technology. And, well, you know, we saw it coming, you know, and rather than go find another job at half of what I used to make because I'd been there 20 years, I decided to try and be self-employed recording audiobooks. That requires all my free time as well as all my work time. So that's why it's been such a trial trying to get back to doing something new, because it does take copious amounts of time to make a show.
Yeah, I mean, for those people who don't know what it takes to get a script from its original format to a recorded amazing show, can you just talk us through the processes that you go through once you get hold of that script in your lovely hands?
Well, you know, yes, writing takes time. Then it's casting, finding actors, getting all the voices recorded and in, putting together, you know, the standard things, opening, closing credits, default special effects if you've got a show with something very specific. Like for Fatal Girl, when she leaves her body, there's a certain sound to it, you know. You got to put together all those effects. And then for every episode, you're putting together the scenes, you're mixing the voices, making it sound like it's in a space rather than just flat. And timing and adding stuff and editing and music and finding music and special effects. And then there's marketing.
Yay, marketing, everybody's strong point.
You know, it is a very, very complicated procedure. At a minimum, from what I've talked to people and stuff, a show will take, I mean, from writing all the way to finish, each episode takes about an hour per minute at a very minimum if you're doing a fully realized show.
Wow, that's astounding.
Oh, I know, especially knowing that Fatal Girl, which probably takes longer because of the fight scenes. The fight scenes are amazing, I should say myself. And those are well over an hour each. Oh, and right now, by the way, I should mention that I also have an online radio station right now.
Oh, yes.
I play all of my old shows at some point, some of the readings I've done of Lovecraft and other stories, as well as occasional old-time radio shows. I'm going to change those out soon, too. I keep meaning to, but again, it's time.
And where can people find that?
Oh, it's at justpastautomat.com, all one word. And that's from the opening credits of 19 Nocturne. For now, it's just things I've done. Except for Edict Zero. I got permission from Jack to play that. It plays at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. my time every day. So I figured that way it kind of covers most of the world at some point. Except for when I forget to program the next week, and sometimes that happens.
And with regards to 19 Nocturne Boulevard smashing back into our excited ears, is that coming back with a bang of beautiful aural luminescence?
It's actually going to sneak back in small increments, let's put it that way. I've decided the best way, because I've got a Patreon running, and that's at, you know, patreon.19nocturne.com. Or slash 19 Nocturne. Darn it, I should know what that is. But, yeah, I think it's Patreon/19Nocturne. It should be easy to find once you get there, and I've got links to it.
Yeah, we'll pop it on our show notes.
That would be super. what I'm coming back with is what I call a micro serial. I've got a 20 episode season of a show, but each episode is 5 minutes long. And my time is so limited, I'd rather put out a 5 minute show every month than wait 6 months to put out a half hour show. I've also been recording, I have things coming out in my feed right now twice a week, doing what I call Atomic Julie's Galactic Bedtime Stories, where I read old sci-fi stories that are in the public domain that I find on Project Gutenberg at gutenberg.org. I can't promote them enough. They're awesome. But the micro serial is called The Prisoner of Hancock House, and it's a sort of a ghost story with a X-Files flavor set in 1995. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out and how, if I can hook people with it. I think it's, you know, after a couple, three episodes, I think people will be hooked. Because one of the things I want to do with this is, if as I get more Patreon support and can therefore make more time, I mean, take time away from paid work without, you know, losing my house or electricity, I can speed it up. So to start with, it's going to come out once a month, and then it'll come out every other week if once my Patreons reach 400 is the arbitrary number I've picked. And then when we get there, I'll pick another number and something else will happen.
And before you know, you'll have an empire.
I really hope so. Well, you know, one of the things I really want to do is I've got several other ideas for micro serials like this, and I could see reaching a point where I'm putting out 5 minutes of different shows a couple times a week. And just so it's all ongoing serials. I mean, this is, and it's going to be starting on October 1st for my $10 and up Patreons, then November 1st for the lower echelons, and then December 1st for the regular RSS feed.
I mean, would you say it's a very different landscape now to the one you were working in before? And I mean, there's such a flooded market, isn't there, of wonderful shows?
You know, the funny part is I haven't actually had a chance to listen to anything. You know, I mean, my day is spent listening to myself talk because of the audiobooks. So my listening time I used to have a commute, and I used to have, you know, even time at work when I could be doing other things while I listen, or listening to things while I work. And I just don't have the time now. So I have no idea what other shows are out there right now.
Yes, there's so many. It's amazing.
Oh, I know. I've stood out before, and I think I can stand out again. For one thing, I'm talking to somebody who is interested in possibly translating some of my old scripts into German.
Ah, die Hörspiele.
Yes, Germany is a huge market for audio dramas. And as one of my fans put it, my shows were featured in at least two or three of the Hörspiel Summer Leipzig. And the last year that I was putting out a show, At the Sound of the Beep was the only English language amateur show represented there. But when my first appearance there, one of my fans in Germany wrote to me and said, all the others, I can tell they're depressing just from the titles. That's why they'll win. And so, I mean, they've got a huge market, but apparently, you know, there's something that isn't, that they're not getting there. So hopefully a translation would go over well. I'm excited just by the idea of it, though I can see there's quite a magnitude, because you can't just run it through Google Translate and hope it works. Just from having spent my high school years reading different translations of, say, Cyrano de Bergerac, you know, you can see how different things come out depending on who's doing the work. So it's tricky, and you have to understand idiom and implication and in-jokes. And so it may be something that I end up working a lot with. I'm very excited about it. So, you know, I think this is a good time to get back into it, because because, I mean, it is starting to get recognized. I think there's, I actually was talking to a young man recently who's like, I just found a category for this on Spotify or something, and I didn't even know this existed. I'm like, yes, it's existed for quite a long time. As long as, you know, it's going to take me a little bit to get back into production full swing. Just because, you know, you get used to having everything at your fingertips and you know where all your standard effects are and stuff, and I have to rebuild all of those libraries in my head.
And I assume there's a lot more readily available now than there was for you before. So that's exciting.
Well, yeah, I'm going to stick to stuff that I licensed, I think, because I don't know how the Patreon affects the Creative Commons. And, you know, that's a whole nother discussion for a different day, I suspect. Well, and I hate to say it. I mean, I loved being able to do this in my free time when I had free time, but you know, I'm starting to realize also, though, that, you know, our culture is not made to compensate the artist. And it's kind of horrible. And, you know, even now with the Patreon, until I reach a certain point, I can't even turn around and compensate my actors yet. But then people are always, I always get this discussion with people. They're like, oh, I'm going to pay the actors. How much should I pay them? And I'm like, are you paying yourself? Oh, no, it's just, I'm just doing this in my free time. I'm going to pay the actors. And I'm like, okay, think about how much time you're actually putting into this. I mean, really, even me, even, you know, doing like an Edict Zero as an actor, I read through the script, I record my lines, you know, all that. It's not going to take me, even with his momentous scripts, because his shows are very long, it doesn't take more than, you know, a couple hours, and I'm a main character. On the other hand, you know, he's going to be mixing that same show for weeks and months, you know. And so, yeah, that's kind of where you have to think about it from a producer point of view, is where is the time? You know, the actors are spending a minimal time by comparison. And it's not that I don't want to compensate the actors. I really do at some point. But, you know, it's so easy to let the production time slide. And you know, it's exacting work. And it's, you know, it's not something you can just whip together and hope it works most of the time.
So what do you think we need out there in this crazy world to progress for the next steps in the progression of this cool list of mediums?
I would love to see something in a, you know, it, something, I would love to see a platform that not only attached all shows, I mean, just had like links to everything available and let people rate them. I mean, you know, I hate, see, the wonderful thing about online podcast audio drama is that anybody can make online audio drama. The horrible thing about online audio drama is that anybody can make online audio drama. You know, I'd like to see something, you know, with some kind of, not necessarily requiring a rating system, but it'd be nice to have, so people could find shows and see which ones other people liked. Because, you know, that's how we do books, how we do movies, everything else. But some centralized place that then could provide, you know, a pay level that could, you know, include shows that it was making. I mean, you know, sort of like, you know, half YouTube, half Netflix or something. Where then things that were being made with the Creative Commons would obviously be in the free area. For anyone listening who doesn't know what I mean by the Creative Commons, is there are a number of music sources and special effects, sound effects sources, which specify that you can use them, but only if you're making a product that is not going to be paid for. As long as you're making something free, you can use their stuff for free. But with various variations on that, you know, but things that are made specifically with dedicated music that's been paid for and special effects that have been licensed and all the things, then we could have some professional stuff. And that would be really nice.
So it's about quality assurance for you, essentially.
It in a way. You know, I love all the little shows. There's nothing wrong with, I mean, little shows, all the little people. Oh, my God. No, but quality means more than simply quality of individual episodes. It also means that there's some sort of vague guarantee that the show will continue. Because so many times people get hooked into a show and then it vanishes because the people who were making it got bored. Or real life stepped in, or whatever happened, because it was done as a project and not as a business. You know, when you approach it from a business, and I'm guilty of that too, obviously. I had to just drop everything at one point. I mean, I'd started on an audio version of a novel that I got like 16 episodes into. They weren't chapters because chapters was too different in length. So I had to break it up into equal chunks kind of thing, called The Hole Behind Midnight, which is, it's amazing. If you haven't listened to that, it is amazing. I do play them occasionally, slip them in among everything on the radio station. And I've got most of the voices for the rest of that, except for the narrator. But it's a first-person narrative. And it's a book by Clinton Boomer. It is an amazingly hilarious, obnoxious, offensive, irreverent look at a world with magic. And the main character is endlessly obnoxious and hilarious.
Well, that sounds really good fun.
It was, but, you know, again, it was something else I had to lay off of because I was doing it because I wanted to. You know, right from the start, it was just, I really want to do this.
Well, that is so key, isn't it? Actually wanting to do something and yearning to get cracking. And that excitement of really just wanting to get stuck in, yeah.
And I'm trying to put together myself an office space so I can be more efficient.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, that's so important, isn't it? Having the right equipment around you to be efficient and to be able to just get on with it without distractions. And we're actually doing a couple of eps time, a couple of shows on home recording equipment. We've got at least 10 folks that you might well have heard of talking about what they use and why they use it, which I think is going to be greatly valuable to our listeners. So.
What I want is all my laptops, and I have quite a few, because they're all Windows 7, so I don't run out anytime soon. Because God knows I don't want Windows 10. But I want them arrayed around me like a drum set.
Well, I do hope your dream comes true as soon as possible. The Phil Collins or other such amazing drummer that's better of podcasting. No, but I mean, if people come to you for advice, because you were on panels and all sorts for audio drama, what are the main things that people need to know?
Most of the time, I mean, people want to know, I hate to say, the thing people want to know is that it's easy. And it's really not, though it is significantly, magnitudinally easier than making a film. You know, because the nice part of audio drama is you don't have to cast a visual type. You know, like I said, I played a German soldier in the temple, a dude, obviously, and reasonably well, I think. Well, he's described as a womanish Rhinelander. I figured I could get away with it. But that's Lovecraft words, not mine. But you know, I can cast anybody as anything. I like especially encouraging young people. And, I mean, when I did The Canterville Ghost, I did my own adaptation of The Canterville Ghost, and I knew who I wanted for the ghost, but for all the live characters, and this was very early on, this was one of, you know, my first year of doing this, I was like, I don't know who I want. So I turned to Beverly, who was in high school, Beverly Poole, who was also one of the main characters in Fatal Girl, and has been infinitely helpful to me in many ways. I turned to her and I said, you know what? cast me this whole, all the live characters from your drama class. Oh, she rubbed her hands together and went, oh, the power.
I mean, that's so brilliant. What an opportunity for those people and kids and whoever was involved. I do think that is a question we get quite a lot. Like, where can I get my actors from? Well, you know, around you, there's probably about 20 within spitting distances of really rather very good amateur dramatic companies with, you know, pockets of people who are actually pretty professional, I would say. And so it is worth perhaps just, you know, looking in your local web pages and finding out what companies are in your local papers and just perhaps approaching them and saying, look, I need these voices. Anybody interested? I bet they'll love it. They will jump at it. Any chance to perform, they'll be there. And they'll just want to get involved in everything. Although I bet they won't be able to keep up with the amount of roles that you're able to offer, Julie. I mean, how on earth do you produce so much? You just keep the ball rolling. There's so many amazing things that you have fingers in pies of, she said badly.
Well, the thing that kept me on track for a long time was I did, literally for 3 or 4 years, I was getting a show out every 2 weeks, a half hour show out every 2 weeks. I was spending all my free time doing this, and it was just on me as far as production went. And the way I did that was I was constantly listening to music. You know, I mean, I was searching for music for 4 episodes ahead. You know, because some of the music I wanted was surprisingly specific. Amazingly specific sometimes. And I was constantly casting 4 or 5 episodes in advance so that I would get lines well in advance so that when I finished an episode, I had everything on hand to do the next episode right there. And so I was never a cold start. It was always overlapping. And I think it requires a degree of organization for sure. And that, you know, pretty much has to be in one person's hands at that level. But you want to know about lucky music. I got at one point, now one of the places I used to go, and it still kind of works, but not exactly because they've restructured it, was a website called Jamendo. There was a lot of music put up there by bands that was Creative Commons. The way they make the website look, last time I looked, and this was a couple years ago, they now sort of charge for everything. I mean, you can download anything for personal listening for free, but for anything else, you have to sort of license it. But if you look, many of the albums still have the Creative Commons license attached, or they did when I was last there, which means that they are still free to use, because once you put it in the Creative Commons, it doesn't really uncome out of it, you know what I mean? And a lot of the artists are actually easy to contact and request a permission from for that sort of thing too, which I did a lot of. I had actually adapted a story from Borges, Jorge Luis Borges, an Argentine speculative fiction writer from the 40s. And a lot of what he did involved sort of alternate dimension things and belief affecting reality and stuff. But I wanted Argentine tangos. I wanted something that really sounded, you know, Argentine. I didn't want something too cheesy. And on Jamendo, I actually came across a women's vocal group that did Argentine tangos. And I wrote to them for permission because their stuff wasn't exactly Creative Commons. I mean, but I got permission. And the funny thing is, I was 3/4 of the way through putting the episode together before I decided to look up the lyrics of one of their songs, because I was using it as the refrain between all the scenes. And I thought, you know, if I know what it meant, I could make it mean something.
Yes.
I looked up the lyrics, and they were from a poem by Borges.
Oh.
By the author. That was one of those, yes, it was so perfect.
So almost fortuitous. Maybe you were Argentinian in your past life and you understood actually what it meant in your brain somewhere. So regards to your relaunch, what are your plans? How are you going to get this into our ears?
Well, the big thing is, I mean, I'm just going to slowly ease back into it as much as I can. I mean, I would love to reach a point where I could afford to get back to what I was doing, you know. But for now, I've got to force myself to keep making money. I mean, it's so easy to go, oh, I'm just going to slack off and do a couple of episodes. No, I have to keep recording, you know. And doing the audiobooks I do is mostly royalty work, which means that you never know if you're going to get paid, you know. Necessarily. I'm also trying to start something to promote those, because promoting from a narrator's point of view is very, very awkward. I mean, you can say, you know, as an author can say, if you liked this story I wrote, you might like another story I wrote because you like my writing. The narrator can go, if you like this book I narrated, here's another book I narrated. It's kind of crap, but it's still my voice, you know. It's really, really awkward. Though I have to admit, right now, I'm very, very excited because one of the things I'm narrating right now is the latest novella in the Powder Mage series by Brian McClellan. And they are really, really good. Oh, it's so good. Well, see, the cool part is the novels are narrated by a male voice because the main character is a general and a dude. But I get to do all the novellas. He likes me, I think. He likes my voice. And I think this is like the seventh of the novellas I've done. And they're all like 3 or 4 hours, 2 to 3 hours each. And they're so good. And I mean, it's really neat when you get to do really good character, really good meaty. I mean, and he writes battles that are exciting. Well, no, I mean, I'm not a big fan of books that are huge combat-oriented stuff most of the time. But these ones I really enjoy. Anyway, I figured I should get some self-promotion in there.
Well, why not? I mean, essentially this show is a publicity show for people's wares. So, you know, those are your wares. Got it. Flaunt it, quite frankly. But yeah, I mean, you'd spoke about fight scene there for that. And just having listened to your work, some of them, not all of them, there are some fantastic fight scenes. So this is something that we get asked quite a lot, actually, how to make convincing fight scenes. So can you talk us through kind of your processes of what you do to create some exciting and vibrant fight scenes with pace and all sorts?
The things that I do, well, the first, for simple mechanics of doing it, the way I do it is, you know, because I'm doing massive 3D things. You know, I do, well, I mean, 180-degree sound, basically, on most things. You listen to it on headphones and you can actually hear things zipping around.
Yeah.
I don't do full...
the whole binaural.
Yeah,
thing.
I don't have the back. I don't know how to do that. I mean, I don't have the equipment to do that. But I wish it did, maybe someday. But for now, the trick for me is, and I do this sort of an old school way, because I know there are programs that let you like slide it from left to right without changing or anything. Uh-huh. And I work in Audacity, so I'm like bare bones as far as technology goes, but I can make it do all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah.
So the thing for me is I take each character and I mix their track with all their lines and their effects, including their footsteps, their whatever, you know, and have all these tracks. Now, for me, I'm huge about multiple saves because Audacity doesn't backtrack once you close it. And so it's hugely important. I'll have each character's lines. I'll put them all together in one thing so I know where they are in the scene. I mean, that's always the first thing you do. You put the lines together, you get the timing in. Yeah. Then you start mixing in sound effects, and I'll take like Chiyoko and I'll bring her to a screen of her own and put all her effects in the track and save that and then mix a copy and bring it back to a working version. And once I've got all of them with all their effects in a working version, then I'll start moving them through the scene. And that way, because one of the worst things you ever hear, and this may be just something from Audacity, but I always make everything mono before I mix it. Because when it moves through the scene, it's going to become stereo.
Yeah.
But you don't want, because this is something I've heard so many times. If you have like stereo footsteps, you know, where you're listening to it, just the footsteps and you hear in one on the left and one on the right and one on the left and one on the right. When you move that through a scene, the left still tries to stay left even when you've moved it to the right.
Okay.
And it creates weird effects. That's why I make everything mono. I know it's a little thing, but it's weird when you hear it in a show.
Yeah.
You know, but as I'm moving it through the scene, it becomes stereo again. And but the reason for mixing all the effects first is so that all of that character's effects move with that character. And that's huge because there's nothing like realizing that, you know, your character's off to the right, but you forgot to move their footsteps and their footsteps are centered.
It's like strange elongating bodies.
Yeah, and moving everything individually through the scene is a pain in the butt. That's why I mix them and move it all together. And I'm big on fading out one track while fading in another to get it moving, you know, fading in out a left track to a middle track to a right track, so I can do it at whatever speed I want. And I'm sure that, you know, other programs are able to do that, you know, automatically, but I don't mind having it visually in front of me because that helps me keep track of where everybody is.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Superb.
Yeah. And, you know, and then after everything else goes, you put the music in.
So it's completely layered, but how many tracks would you say you generally might use for something
like
that?
Well, because I'm constantly saving a prior version and then condensing down tracks into, you know, groups of tracks into single tracks, it's really hard to know. I don't go in for the 40 tracks on one screen thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll have to backtrack through versions if I need to go back to things.
Yep.
But that way, I'm never destroying the steps I took previously.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll use up a ton of memory on it, sure, but that's what backup drives are for. It's better than having to reconstruct the scene because you forgot to save a version.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And do you do your own Foley
once
ever?
Once in a while. If there's something that I simply can't find.
Yep. Monsters being punched.
Well, I did a lot of noises, like blah, 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 kind of noises for one monster that I did like six different tracks and then mixed them back up together. Well, actually, the monster in Making Book, which was, it's a real interesting monster. That was one, I have to say, Making Book it was either the first or second episode I mixed. That one and Within the Walls of Eryx, which is the Lovecraft adaptation, were like the two first things I ever mixed.
Right.
And they're both surprisingly tricky in many ways. So I started myself off with a bang, to say the least.
Well, why not?
And the funny thing is that with Making Book, I've got this book that when it opens up, tentacles come out and eat a person.
Awesome.
Which is like, okay, that's some great effects. Now, I got to record my part, because I also star in that one, at the recording studio where we were still working out of the studio for the show that I had was working in as well. We did quite a bit at that studio that summer before I started either having recordings at my house or just doing satellite recording. And everybody who was there recording with me were surprised at how long I could scream. And it wasn't just a scream. It was like variations on a scream and
amazing
cry and scream. And because she's watching this tentacles eat somebody. And it was just so much fun to put some of that together. It was just amazing. It's sort of a Damon Runyon meets Lovecraft story.
Sounds amazing. Damon Runyon fan right here. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for giving up your time to talk to us. I think there are so many other things I'm sure we could speak to, and I would love to do that again once perhaps your next season is up and running and out there. But where can people find your works on online?
Our static old website, which still has a ton of stuff on it, is at 19 Nocturne Boulevard. That's 19nocturneboulevard.com or .com or .net. But the RSS feed, which has all the current Atomic Julius Galactic bedtime stories and things like that, as well as all the old stuff, is at 19 Nocturne, and this is 19 spelled out, .libsyn.com.
Okay, folks, so head on over there straight after this and have a really good listen, because there's so much good stuff. So yes, please do launch that and then let Julie know what you think of it. Feedback is so nice.
We also have a Facebook page if people want to find us and get in touch there.
Superb. So yes, we'll put all the links to social media that we can grab hold of on the show notes, so people will hopefully be able to find
you. Right, I have Twitter too.
Yes, Twitter as well.
I'm even posting episodes to YouTube.
Superb. And are you getting good views on that? Because a few people are trying that these days. Are you getting a good audience?
It's building slowly. I mean, right now, the big deal is just to reach out to another potential audience that haven't found podcasting yet. And that's really, I mean, that's what marketing is just trying to find more audience.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And marketing is always all of our weak point. That's why I want a central... a central like clearinghouse for everything that
make it easy,
that is dynamic and like does things and isn't run by me.
Well, can whoever is going to make that hurry up, because Julie's got plenty of stuff to put on it. Well, thank you very much for your time and happy creating. I hope to hear lots and lots more from you. Thank you, Julie.
Oh, I love talking about myself.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. What an inspiring creative, Julie. She's slowly growing her Patreon to help finance the work she's doing. And I do just want to ask, do you listening as an audio drama creative ever find that your creative needs were compromised due to budgetary constraints? What is money anyway to us creative types? Well, if you've ever wanted to use a music clip but couldn't as it was just too expensive, then you know what I'm going to say. You need to try Audioblocks. It's royalty free, and as we said at the top of the show, there's a 7-day free trial, folks. So do jump on that and spend the next 7 days with no sleep downloading everything, and just keep your eye out for more and more sound effects and loops and music being added all the time. So it's definitely worth a look at over the 100,000 clips on there, and it's a very affordable price of subscription after that. So if you also want to throw some money at something else, then why not throw it at Julie? We'll put her links on the show notes, and you too can support her amazing output of quality work. And if you want to contact her, say that you enjoy her work, then do, as I do think more people should contact people if they enjoy their work, because, you know, some listeners have no idea how much it means to just get a little positive comment on an email or tweet or message on Facebook just to say they've enjoyed your stuff. So there's quite a lot of people working in isolation, so just to get that comment of hello, I like your stuff, it's a wonderful lift. So do reach out. And talking about that, Beth, do you get a lot of people contacting you?
I certainly get some fan interaction. We get people sort of reaching out on Facebook and Twitter to sort of say they've enjoyed the show. Sometimes we get emails where people write in a bit more detail about how they've enjoyed the show or related to a particular character or storyline. I guess it really gets me if they have sort of related to something. Obviously, it's a comedy, and I'm very much a fan of that. But sometimes some of the issues that the characters have seem to have sort of registered with people, even through the comedy, they can kind of see that there's some grain of real life there, and if it's moved people. Sometimes I've had messages where I've just been having a really bad day, and just work stuff, and it can be incredibly heartening to just hear from someone who you've never met saying that they've been listening to the show, and maybe they just started it, or maybe they just finished it, and it really is lovely. I guess the other thing that we've had is we've met some of our listeners at the live shows, mm-hmm. which has been absolutely lovely, because it just sort of takes away the barriers, and you're just chatting like you would, sharing sort of a drink, and sometimes people have made us badges or mm-hmm. made us scented candles, like in Antigone's embalming fluids, which is just incredible. And
you know, that's made lovely. Of. It's not something
great. But it's just so lovely to find that people are enjoying it and are sort of into it, because I'm incredibly into it, probably to a ridiculous extent. So it's really nice to know other people are enjoying what you do. And God bless the internet, eh?
Hooray!
Yeah, we actually get to kind of have some feedback, which is really lovely.
Yeah. I mean, because Rick Coast was talking about in our last episode or so about creatives reaching out to each other as well. I think that's also key. I mean, do you get much interaction with other folks in the industry yourself?
Well, I mean, here is something that very much your group, I think, is a real sort of heart for a lot of people, a sort of place where the community can kind of come together and help each other out. Also, the Slack is sometimes moves so fast I really can't keep up, but it's a wonderful place to communicate with other people and share ideas, share dilemmas, or just share sort of weird quirks of working in this world and what it's like. Mm. It's an incredibly supportive community. I think anyone coming into it should be aware that there are a lot of people who might be having difficulties that you are having, and can offer a whole world of advice, which is really lovely.
Yes, because I do think that too. And I do feel that a lot of people feel rather insular in what they're doing, whereas... Yeah, I don't think you need to feel like that. I think, you know, take that brave step of actually speaking to someone or asking a question in a forum, like, has anyone found this happens, or could you help me with this, or some such. And I'm sure you'll find people are finding the same, who are also perhaps a little bit shy, who appreciate you doing that. And we've talked before about the introverted nature of some podcasting types. And so, yeah, it's kind of hard for a lot of people to do that. But I do think it's worth it, because then it just does help you progress. It does help you feel, I guess, part of this community. And I think that's the best way that this audio community can thrive: people actually talking to each other and supporting each other. And well, that can only get more and more exciting and grow this community, can't it? Yes. Yeah, of course there's going to be some jarring discussions, to be honest, but you know, that's better than none at all, isn't it? So, yeah, you know who you are. So there's lots of fun and positive things happening, yes. Because what would you say that your ambitions are within audio drama currently?
Well, I have so many things. I guess comedy is sort of what I mainly would like to do. I would like to be in and creating new female-led comedies, different genres, different periods, different exciting adventures. I'd also just like to get more pieces of new writing on starring women that sort of span different sexualities and different experiences, and sort of address what it's like to be a woman today, not necessarily comedy. I just wish I could do it all now. I wish I had kind of time to be doing it all now, but one thing at a time, we'll get there.
And obviously there's a lot of people just coming to find this wonderful world of audio. And there's a lot of things you could say, but with your experience now, what would be your main advice for those starting out in audio drama voice acting and producing?
I'm not sure if I'm in a position to be giving advice.
You certainly are. Goodness, if you can't.
I suppose if you're starting out in acting, find some time to do some classes. It can be really helpful. I find classes terrifying, but it's really useful, because you're sort of slightly out of your comfort zone. You have to do something in real time. Maybe if you can get yourself a mic, it can be a very basic mic to begin with. Get comfortable with it, experiment, play around, see if you can learn the basics about how to record at home. Get used to hearing your voice. I when I first started training at drama school, I was absolutely terrified stood in front of a mic. Really frightened. If you're anything like me, you'll probably always be a little bit nervous, but I think you can get really used to being in front of the microphone. And now I do not feel terror anymore, and that really helps me, even if I do still feel a bit nervous. And so overcoming that, just getting used to it, making it something that isn't an obstacle, I think is really important. Reach out to your community. Know that on Facebook, on Twitter, there are other people like you. Listen to the radio, listen to podcasts, because podcasts are on the up. Radio is wonderful, but it's quite hard to get onto it, and it is no longer the only way of creating audio drama. Find things you love. If you're listening to something you don't love, change it up, listen to something else, because there's so much out there. And if you want to be involved, contact the people. Pursue the things that most interest you. And if you're starting out in audio production, yes, I don't know quite so much about that. I think certainly in terms of contacting people online, making friends, looking out for stuff, definitely do that. And, you know, get in touch with Snatchback. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to start out, if you want to start making stuff, maybe start making stuff with me. That'd be great. But yeah, I guess the community is this incredible thing that we have. It's international now, which means you're just as likely to be getting advice from somebody all the way over in America, or indeed anywhere around the world, as you are somebody in London, which is just absolutely lovely. And I haven't found that closeness in any other part of the industry, really. It's very much an audio thing, which is great.
Yeah, I agree. And if I finish editing one of these episodes at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can have a lovely conversation with someone on Slack or Facebook in America who's just opened a beer or woken up or going to bed or whatever it is.
Right, you never ever need to sleep.
Yeah, so, you know, you just audio drama 24/7.
And please do fill in our winter survey form. Have you done that yet, Beth?
No, but I definitely will.
Hooray!
Yeah, very, very simply, it's a very easy way of feeding back to us what you'd like us to do. And, well, if you don't tell us, I'll just keep choosing things that I like. So go on, have your say, guys. Make a difference. And finally, don't forget to go to audioblocks/ADPP to start downloading those sound effects and music and loops and all the stock audio you can imagine. So thank you once again to my executive editor Anne-Marie Luff and Julie and Beth, and congratulations on your 19 Nocturne Boulevard and Snatchback relaunch.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
And thanks also as ever to all of our Patreons and www.thepodcasthost.com for their hugely valuable financial support of the show. Do jump on their website to help with all of your podcasting needs. So it's end the show with Class is the trailer for our patron Fred Greenhalgh's enormously exciting show we spoke all about an episode or so ago, X-Files Cold Cases. Enjoy!
Boardwalk Key, Martha's Vineyard, 11:27 p.m.
Come get it!
Come take it back from me.
Corey, I'm gonna kill you.
I thought you said you wanted to go for a swim.
With my top still on, you perv.
Come on, Tara. It's the private beach. No parties, no parents, and no peeping.
Give me that.
Oh, Tara, there's a dress code on this beach. I'm not sure you're meeting the obligations that the community adheres to.
Fine.
What you doing?
Here. You can have the bottom half, too.
Whoa.
But you know the rules, Corey.
Huh?
You can't have what you can't catch. Well?
I didn't think we were actually gonna go swimming.
No?
I just thought we'd maybe, you know.
Oh, what's the matter, Corey? Afraid of a little shrinkage in the water?
We ought to go back. There could be people around.
Hey, what was that?
You don't want to be in the water after dark. You know what the sheriff says. Tara? Tara, where'd you go? This isn't funny.
Help me!
Grab my hand! I've got you! Just hold on! No, tighter!
It's pulling me!
Oh my god!
Tara? Tara!
The X-Files, Cold Cases. Starring David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. Episode 2, Hosts. FBI Headquarters, Washington, D.C., 9:16 a.m.
I don't believe it.
That's pretty much what you said the first time you walked through this door.
I know, but it's like a time capsule.
Wouldn't be surprised to find my fossilized lunch in the trash.
I thought office space would be at more of a premium these days.
Come on, Scully. You walked in here, saw me sitting there hunched over photographic slides of the paranormal and the paranoid, and you thought, who is this dashing young man?
Sorry, nobody down here but the FBI's most unwanted.
I found you odd, but sincere.
I'll settle for that.
And at least a little full of yourself, at times.
Ouch.
I just was hoping for something other than a basement office.
Everything's where it was. Even the dust looks familiar, but that can't be right.
What are you doing? Mulder, we have a meeting upstairs. We're running late.
Hold on a second. If we're actually going to be back doing this, we might as well put on a brave face.
That old poster?
That's going straight back on the wall, partner.
I want to believe.
But with one important amendment. Magic marker, please.
Here. I still want to believe.
You betcha. What do you think?
I think we're still late.
Okay, good.
Deputy Director Skinner?
You late?
You were right.
Sorry, Deputy Director Skinner. Didn't know you'd moved to Kirsch's old office.
Well, we're wrapping up the senior staff meeting, so as one last order of business today, I'd like to personally extend a welcome back to Agents Fox Mulder and Dana Scully. Your experience and specialized expertise will, without doubt, be a vital asset to the Bureau going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That'll be all, thank you.
Don't tell me we've finally been accepted.
If they give me a gold watch, I'm putting it on eBay.